Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff.
Check, 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 check. I literally just create madness.
Boiler up.
I'm going to go off here.
They don't have a great quarterback.
I got to take a break. I'm getting in trouble.
To win the Big Ten, you first got to win the West.
Bad Bunny.
Have you heard his name in a while?
No.
Has it bothered you?
No. Defensively, they got to come in with some confidence.
Is that even analytics?
I am in a parking garage. I'm kind of lost.
Terrence Shannon, Matthew Meyer, RJ Melendez, Coleman Hawkins.
These trumpet presentations aren't over.
I didn't come here to go 5-7.
I'm so proud of Illinois football right now.
I'm so tired of Joel Embiid.
We're not taking Patrick Corbin.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh.
You are Reba McEntire's niece.
Roshan Russell.
Coach Bielma.
You no longer have to look at yourself.
What?
We got all kinds of things for you here.
There's a lot of glass.
Oh.
Guys, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
It's the drive.
Smack dogs.
Hey, what's up? It's The Drive with Tame Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. We are back after being off yesterday. Day baseball in St. Louis kept us off the airwaves. The Cardinals were able to get a win. They've won 5 straight. Look out, Kyle.
And 8 of 10.
We are going to talk
some
baseball.
The devil magic is back.
Is it?
The Cardinals aren't dead. I mean, to say I didn't see this eventually coming would be a lie. I did.
Derek Piper, Kyle Toss with you today. Lante is out. We are off tomorrow, so this is our final day of the show. Cubs-Cardinals have day baseball at Wrigley tomorrow, so this is our last show of the week, and you will not hear me next week. I'm headed to Florida for a little vacation. No better time to go down south in Florida where like the heat index is probably 110.
Oh,
but,
is it?
It's pretty hot.
Is it going to be that next week, too, if you looked ahead?
It's going to be pretty hot.
Oh, boy.
But, we buy the water and a pool at the place, too, if you want to keep close to somewhere cool. But it'd be nice to get away for a little bit. I'm excited about that. But we got a big show for you coming up. Not in terms of guests. We just got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk plenty of football. There's a big storyline that we weren't able to get to before we were off on Tuesday, which is the running back market in the NFL, the contract disputes between Saquon Barkley and the Giants, Josh Jacobs and the Raiders. And just the growing narrative, there's been a lot of running backs that have weighed in just on the status of the running back value in the NFL, the contract setup where the rookie deal is of 4 years in length. You can then get franchise tagged, and a lot of these guys are playing their prime on rookie deals, and then teams are pretty much saying, you know, we don't want to commit big money to the running back position. It's become more of a discount position in the NFL. So we'll dive into that as we go along. We also have an NFL next question. Justin Fields has come out and said that he feels like he's a top 5 running back quarterback or running back quarterback. He kind of was a running back over a quarterback last year, but running quarterback of all time, which stirred up Colin Cowherd, which will play some of that, which then stirred up me listening to it. So I've got some thoughts on that as well, along with some free agent running backs yet to sign, Dalvin Cook, Ezekiel Elliott among those, and we'll talk about a couple of different NFL topics because it's getting towards that time. We're approaching training camp and we're gearing up for football mode, which I'm definitely excited about. One thing in addition that we will touch on is Io DeSumo, former Illini, continues to be unsigned. There was a report, Dan Bernstein has put it out there, that he's heard that Io will not be back with the Bulls. Is that a report we're buying into? What would the options look like if Io were to go somewhere else? I think that's something that Kyle and I can navigate and try to figure out, and maybe just kind of on the best fit scenarios, you know, where would we like to see Io DeSumo play basketball next season? Because it is a really crucial year for him and trying to get the arrow pointing back up on his stock and trying to position himself for a long career in the NBA. So a lot to hit on as we go along. We're going to start with the Cardinals and Cubs series, two teams that are seeing if they can stay in this thing. I mean, it's a wonky division. The Reds have picked it up here a little bit in the last few games, but they hit a lull and they've only won three of their last 10. You have Milwaukee, who
they're kind of rolling,
is trending up. And I know Corbin Burns was awesome today. And
their bullpen, by the way, have you seen some of the numbers on that post break? I think they've given up like two runs as a bullpen since the All-Star break, and they've got like four guys that are on streaks of sub one ERAs or something. I saw some tweet about it, but they're, as usual, it's nothing new. When you had Devin Williams and Josh Hader at the back end, now they got Devin Williams and this guy they got this offseason basically for free, Joel Piumps, I think is how you say it. He's got like a 1.7 ERA. Mm. And you got the starting rotation with Corbin Burns in it, and they don't even have Brandon Woodruff healthy. I'd be lying if I said the Brewers aren't starting to scare me a little bit. But then at the same time, you look at that lineup, and it's awful.
They're not going to outslug you. And you look throughout the division, they're just above the Pirates in terms of runs scored. They have a negative run differential. Everybody in the division outside of your Cubbies does. The Brewers minus -3 on the differential. The Reds minus -12. The Cardinals minus -21. The Pirates, who have been just flat out atrocious, minus -72. But Kyle, your Chicago Cubs, I know they're still five games under 500, eight games out in the division, but plus +38 on the run differential. Their lineup has started to get hot here of late, put up some big numbers against
the Nationals. If you
ever
want an argument of why run differential really it isn't all that important, it's the Cubs being plus +38 right now. There's no better example.
Let's dive into this as we go into this series. As you pointed out when we were discussing the show plan for today, the Cardinals and Cubs will have a series, a four-game set here in Chicago, and then the Cardinals and Cubs will both play a series early next week before meeting up in St. Louis for another series. So we're going to see a lot of each other coming up over the next week. Are you buying into the notion that one of these teams, I mean, it could totally play out where they pretty much split and
right,
nobody gains any ground, and the Cardinals right now 10.5 out, the Cubs 8 out, and they're pretty much in the same spot as we essentially then get to the trade deadline. But if one of these teams convincingly wins the next two series against the other rival, one of those could be essentially back in the mix for the division, and the other could be pretty well dead and know they're going into the deadline as absolute sellers.
Yeah, I mean, I think it more or less does mean that. If one of these two teams were to rattle off six or seven of the eight games that they play over the next 2 weeks, I don't know if that's going to happen. I'd place a pretty strong bet if I could on it being a split or a pretty close eight games, because that's what it's been this year and historically. But if one of the two were to make a statement and take a lot of these games, they'd not only position themselves in a position where they're not as far back, it's not inconceivable that they could make a run for the division with some moves at the trade deadline, while simultaneously putting the other one in their grave and saying, you're done, start selling, start picking up the phone and selling now. That's really what it comes down to, because you got this series at Wrigley this weekend, then I think each team plays two games against someone else or three games against someone else. Cubs play the White Sox, not sure who the Cardinals play. Then four at Busch, then the deadline, then it's July 31st. These games mean a lot. I mean, the Cardinals have played really well here recently. All of a sudden, they're only 2.5 back of the Cubs. They're only 10 under 500. And if they were to win 6 of 8 against the Cubs or something like that, all of a sudden, maybe that would incentivize John Mozeliak to go get a starting pitcher and to add and try to save his job by putting together a rotation that could go make a run for the division. And if you're the Cubs, we've done this charade for a month and a half now. It's time. This is it. I mean, you have the Cardinals at Wrigley Field for four games this weekend. You got Stroman and Steele on the mound tonight and tomorrow afternoon. You need to win or you're done. You need to win or it's going to be another sale for the Cubs and they're done. And so I think it's a pretty, it's hard to get all excited about two teams that are 5 and 10 games under respectively and be like, oh, here we go. This is a huge series. It's not like some of the Cubs-Cardinals series that we've had in the past, but sneakily, I think it's a super important series and pair of series for both teams as it comes to the trade deadline.
So it's not in line with the D-backs Brave series that we just saw?
No, it isn't. I wish it was.
The Dodgers Orioles.
Yeah, that'd be much more fun to talk about than which team can pretend they're in contention and maybe not sell their best players or most valuable free agent players.
Quick aside, how about that D-backs Brave series?
That was 16-13. Was that 2 days ago?
16-13 game, and then today you had Spencer Strider strike out 13.
Oh, really?
Gallen had a perfect game through six, and then the run started to pour late in that game, and the D-backs were up, I think, 5-4 at one point, but Olson and Riley hit late inning home runs, and the Braves were able to take that one. But the D-backs did, I believe, win 2 out of 3 in that series, so they needed to get right after slipping a little bit in that NL West. Speaking of the D-backs, in terms of the in-between series for our respective teams, the Cardinals will go to Arizona early next week for 3. The Cubs will play
the White Sox.
Is it 2 with the White Sox?
On the south side.
Okay. Let's approach it this way. Let's say the argument for, again, if it's a pretty even split, if it's 4-4, it really doesn't matter at all. Both teams are sitting in their same positions and really on the outside of contention, and the Cardinals especially, because they're even below the Cubs. But let's make the argument for why one side or the other can win this series convincingly, starting with the Cubs. What would make you feel confident that the Cubs could be able to put themselves in a position to, say, win 6 out of 8 or even better than that in this series against the Cardinals?
It'd be riding the top two guys in your rotation. You got Stroman tonight, Steele tomorrow afternoon, and then it sets up perfectly again after you play. You get the 2 games Saturday, Sunday, then 2 on the south side, then it's Stroman, Steele again next Thursday and Friday. You got to win pretty much those 4 games. I mean, you got to ride your top guys in the rotation. I don't have confidence in this Cubs lineup. I know they put up 17 on the Nationals, and they scored like 16 of them in like the 7th and 8th innings. Whatever. I mean, this lineup's been so frustrating to watch. There's no power in it. I'm not going to sit here and act like the Cubs offense is going to be the reason. It's going to be the pitching staff. It's going to be the top two guys in their rotation. You win at the very minimum 3 or 4 of those starts where those two guys are going. Best case scenario, you win all 4 of those. And then you maybe split the other ones with a struggling Drew Smyly and awful Jameson Taillon on the mound. I'm not all that confident with the way the Cardinals are playing right now and the Cubs lineup being this poor. But if you're going to win this series, you're going to ride your starting pitching staff, and you're probably going to win some lower scoring games. But I do like how the rotation lines up for the Cubs.
In those offensive eruptions late in that last series against the Nats, who was getting hot there? What was the names that were really popping for the Cubs that maybe will go into the series hot?
It was pretty much everybody. I mean, it was a lot of singles. It was a lot of just kind of small ball. I mean, it's just not a lot of slug on this team. So you the big innings are usually you get 6-7 hits in an inning up and down the lineup. That was what it was. They had like a 8-run 8th inning on Tuesday where it was 6 straight singles or something like that.
The old assembly line.
Yeah. So Mike Tauchman had a good series. He's come out of nowhere and been solid for the Cubs. Patrick Wisdom's finally not striking out every plate appearance. Has a couple homers here in his last couple games. Cody Bellinger continues to rake here recently. And
where's Dansby's pop?
He is hurt right now.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But,
okay.
Yeah, that's been a problem. He hasn't really hit for a lot of power this year, but he's hurt. That's another point. They said he should be back at some point in this series, but I don't think it's tonight. So hope to get him back too. But, yeah, I don't really have a guy that's red hot. It's kind of been more of a team effort here, but at the same time it was against the Nationals pitching staff. So
to echo your point on why I feel like the Cubs could – convincingly win these next two series against the Cardinals is your guys. I mean, you have Stroman tonight against Steven Matz. Like, that is a ridiculous advantage where Steven Matz is a guy that's, I think he's 0-6 with an ERA.
0-7, 486 ERA.
Yeah,
you have to win tonight if you're the Cubs.
And then you get Steele against Flaherty. And even though Flaherty's been better, you look at his month of July, I think his ERA, I have it right in front of me, 1.45 ERA in July. 3 starts, gave up three earned against the Nats in his last start before that, scoreless outings against the Marlins and the Yankees. But we're really not that far removed. Pre-All-Star break, six earned runs against the Nationals, six earned runs against the San Francisco Giants. So I don't have a lot of confidence in Flaherty. This is a big spot for him, whether it's pushing the Cardinals back into contention or trying to get him, from a Cardinals standpoint, whether he's going to be a big trade piece, if he has the value, if he goes into the trade deadline with five straight really good starts and has a sub-2 ERA in the month of July, then he has appeal either to trade him or maybe you convince yourself that there's enough there to ride it out and try to get him back. Possibly, I would think, a discounted price in free agency based on the full sample size over the last couple of years and the injury concerns. On the Cardinals side, Nolan Arenado is hot. That's something that I would put confidence in. The lineup's been productive. Brendan Donovan's been good. Contreras actually has had some moments here recently. I know in his last five games he's hitting over 300, so that's good to see. Alec Burleson's been good in the last 2 weeks or so. I have the stats in front of me. He's hitting 391. Gorman had a big home run, I think, yesterday off Alcantara, and he's been someone that has been streaky, but right now he's going in to this series in good form. So I'm leaning on the Cardinals lineup, where I know you have concerns about maybe the lack of power with the Cubs or just the overall trust in their production, in particular in these games against Stroman and Steele. The fact you got to see them at the front end of this series and the front end of the next series, you're going to have to outslug this Cubs team for...
It's not hard to do.
For the Cardinals to be able to get the job done. So that's where I'm looking, and I do like that some of those names are just rattled off for in pretty good form of late. Plus, Goldie has traditionally been a thorn in the Cubs side.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of the pitching staff, like Marcus Stroman, the one problem that he's had since he's gotten to Chicago, facing the Cardinals. The Cardinals have owned him since he's been in Chicago. So, it's I don't know. You better win tonight is all I'm saying. You got Stroman, Mats, and I'd assume it lines up in a similar fashion for next Thursday at Busch Stadium. I mean, you got to win those games. You just, when you have that much of a pitching advantage and you have a lineup that doesn't have Dansby in it right now and one that just is so inconsistent, the bottom of the Cubs lineup last night was Miles Mastroboni, Trey Mancini, and Tucker Barnhart. I mean, that's unserious. That's just not a serious 7-8-9. I mean, you step up there. Steven Matz steps up with those three due up and is like, oh, I'm having a clean inning here. That's not going to be a problem for me. So it's just you got to ride your guys, your pitching staff, and those guys got to come to play. Those guys got to shut this Cardinals lineup, which has been red hot here of late, down if the Cubs want to have any chance of making a statement here this weekend.
I'm efforting Marcus Stroman's career numbers against the Cardinals, and I do have them up in 9 starts. Now, this goes pre-Chicago Cubs, but it does play into what
you said.
5 or 6
of those have been with the Cubs.
Yep. So in 9 starts, he's 1-5, 4.96 ERA. I like to hear that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was on such a roll and then went to London, and the Cardinals kind of roughed him up. Now, Trey Mancini did not give him much help by booting a ball a first grader makes a play on. But at the same time, Cardinals hit him around. I know last year at Wrigley in May, I want to say, they lit him up for like 9 runs or something like that. So it's been a problem for him. So tonight's a big one. Tonight's a big one for him and for the Cubs to get the series off on the right foot. You just have to win tonight at Wrigley with Stroman against Mats. You have to. Or really, all hope's kind of lost for the Cubs if you can't get tonight's game, in my opinion.
Big picture across the division, I am going to be very interested to see what the Reds' approach is going into the deadline. I mean, they're probably looking at it from a long-term view, knowing they have a lot of young pieces, not wanting to sacrifice probably too much. I'd imagine, I don't know off the top of my head what the Reds' farm system looks like. You would think that a number of their top prospects are on the big league roster as of right now.
Yeah.
And that in the future, and just in terms of building this thing up, they don't want to sacrifice too much to try to make a run at it this year when it's probably a year or two too soon just to really get the NLCS or make a push at that, at a World Series appearance, if you even want to go that far. In terms of the Brewers, I mean, at the deadline last year, they weren't really out of it, and they traded Josh Hader. So that's a fairly small market team, and I don't know what their flexibility is in terms of adding as well.
I think they're set up okay. You're going to trust your pitching staff if you're the Brewers. You have a good enough rotation. You have a good enough bullpen. You go out and get two or three rental bats at the deadline who aren't going to cost all that much, and you're the clear favorite in the division. I mean, it's simple to me. So I think they're set up pretty well. They have to do it. They got to find the right guys that are going to piece into that lineup and actually give them the offensive help they need. But you get two or three rental bats on that Brewers team, I think they're pretty clearly feeling good about where they are.
That's a good point. And, yeah, we'll be – as we – get closer to that August 1st deadline, the names that will surface off the top of my head, I don't know what hitters might be on the market in terms of who the Brewers could go out and command and that whole kind of thing. But this picture will become more clear as we get further within the next week and a half, and that will be very interesting, not only for the Cardinals and Cubs, but around the division. If you want to weigh in, you can, 217-359-2255. I know we get a lot of Cards and Cubs fans out there. If you have a thought going into this stretch where the rivals would square off for eight over the next week or so, let us know what you think. If you have confidence in one side convincingly winning, if you're a Cardinals fan, there's probably even a faction of the Cardinals fan base out there. They don't want to lose to the Cubs, don't get me wrong, but might not want John Mozeliak to be able to have an out with kind of the what the term was around here during the John Gross era, was the fake rally for the Cardinals, getting back quote unquote in it in a soft division and then ultimately faltering. But John Mozeliak can say, hey, you know, we had injuries early and we showed life down the stretch and I'm keeping my job for another year. I don't want to see that, but I also don't want to get dominated by the Cubs either. So let us know what you think. Scott says fire Mo. 100% Scott, I'm on board with you. But it will be an interesting Cards Cubs series kicking off tonight there in Wrigley. Going forward, we're going to talk the NFL. We're going to talk about the running back market and the dispute there with Saquon Barkley, along with some other running backs, and just what that looks like going forward in the NFL. And we'll talk some more storylines in terms of Justin Fields and some others in the next question. Once again, if you want to weigh in, you can. 217-359-2255. Catch a break, and we will return. This is The Drive.
When you make the right decision, it feels good, like picking the perfect accent rug or choosing a good night's sleep over an all-night crime show binge. It feels really good to make the right insurance decision, too. That's why State Farm agent Kurt Lenschow is right here in Champaign-Urbana to help you select the right protection at the right price. Kurt will make sure you understand your State Farm coverages so you'll know what to expect if the unexpected happens. Just call him when you want the real deal. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. By now, you've all heard the expression, when you turn the key and the car won't run, call 367-9481 for PDR Automotive. They are what's best for your truck or car. They are PDR. But who are they? They, the PDR staff, understand that a name is only as good as the people that represent it. The PDR staff has more than 335 years of combined automotive experience, several employees now on staff for more than 25 years. PDR, more than just a name. Family owned and operated, now celebrating over 50 years in business.
As our nation celebrates its 247th birthday this July, Gale Frerichs Trucking is extending a firecracker of a deal to professional Class A CDL drivers interested in joining our team. In addition to our standard offering of great percentage pay, paid holidays and vacations, pre-planned dispatches, benefits, home time every weekend, and $1,200 per week gross pay guarantee, drivers that join us in the month of July will receive an additional $247 per week for the first 16 weeks with us. Take the family out to dinner when you're home every weekend, or use it as a Christmas fund. It doesn't matter to us. This is America, and you have the freedom to do with it what you want. If you have a Class A CDL and would like to explore our regional van and flatbed opportunities and work for a company that works as hard for you as you do for them, call Tim at 765-793-7131 or email timo@gftlog.com.
Jay Layman here, former U of I All-American linebacker. Do you like steak? Do you like red meat? Well, if you do, you got to check out Long Branch Steakhouse. They had phenomenal steaks, sides, salads. I love the onion rings and the fried mushrooms as well as the fried pickles. you've got to check out Long Branch Steakhouse in beautiful downtown Gifford. That's right. Make the trip to Gifford for some of the best steaks you'll have. Kids love it too. I brought my whole family. I'll see you at Long Branch Steakhouse in downtown Gifford.
Illini fans, stock up on great Illini gear this summer at the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, Game Day Spirit. Their famous buy one, get one free shirt selection is perfect for summer and has some great new designs. Shop their line of polos and other business casual apparel from great brands like Nike, Cutter & Buck, Tommy Bahama, and more. Refresh your wardrobe this summer at Game Day Spirit, located at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign, 6th and Green in Campus Town, and online 24/7 at GameDaySpirit.com. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. I put it out to the text line. Cards and Cubs fans here, Central Illinois, and everybody's streaming us via the YouTube and also StevieJ.com. How you feeling if you're a Cards or Cubs fan? Do you want to get hot in this upcoming stretch? Of course, you want to beat your rivals, but how do you view this? Is one team better positioned for a little run here to get themselves back in it? I said before the break, Scott says, fire Mo, and he's on the series as a whole. Don't care. Ready for football, college, and NFL. 217 says, I agree unless one of the teams wins 6 of 8. Both teams are sellers and won't be near the playoff race, in my opinion. Another 217 asks where I'm going in Florida, and I'm going to Fort Lauderdale.
Nice.
So that'll be nice. It'll be fun. Fly out tomorrow out of Indy. The DBT is going on real quick. To hit on, Illinois has not had a team here the last 2 years. Are you missing it at all?
Honestly, a little bit. It was kind of fun. Yeah. I liked it. I like seeing some of those old Illini guys get out there and just watch some hoops in the summer when hoops is over. I don't have much reason to watch the tournament unless there's an Illini team, so I kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think last year, 2 years ago, when Illinois, the House of Pain team, lost over there in Peoria, they're playing at Bradley, and they lost their first-round game after assembling a team. Their first year was really exciting, especially there was no really other sports going on. They beat Aaron Kraft's Buckeyes squad in an upset, and that was really cool. We were live watching that game and on the radio at the same time. We were able to live commentate and then get some guys on the air. And then the next year was a disappointment. I know they added Brandon Paul that year, and just kind of people are like, I don't know. It maybe doesn't matter as much. I will say when you don't have a contending baseball team,
yeah,
and just in general, we're hitting the dead of summer, it'd be nice to focus on some former Illini and see those guys in action and be given a reason to care about this tournament, which I'm with you. Otherwise, I don't really have an interest. But now that we've had some – notable players cycle out of the program, and you don't get the NBA caliber of guys. We're not going to see Iwadosumu play for the House of Pain Illinois alumni team, but Trent Frazier's a guy that could be able to be added to that team if they were to reassemble. Kofi Coburn.
Oh, boy.
That's enough.
That'd be fun.
Isn't that enough of a reason to run it back? Like, get Feliz, get Kofi, get Trent, and some of those other – I mean, Revonte Rice was on the team – when they had it the 2 years. I think that'd be a squad I'd be interested in watching. And a 217 says the TBT makes me remember Mike Dom. What a legend.
Oh, man.
He was a transfer portal addition.
Yeah, he was
for the House of Pain. And, man, he was really, really good.
Yeah, he was outstanding. That was fun.
Would you want to see Matthew Meyer on that team? Yes or no?
Why not?
Yeah.
Give me some shooting. Give me some step backs and some – you know, you might have to sit him down a little bit, but I'll take the spurts. If he's hot that day, it'd be fun.
It would be. I know some would say no because they just kind of feel sour about the way that thing ended. Oh, yeah, Maxwell has a good point. Georgie B would be great.
Oh, that'd be so great.
Kofi
the
and
energy
Georgie
that
reunion.
He'd bring. Georgie out there pumping his arms out around and dancing on the sideline again. Oh, I want to see that.
Surely Georgie's G League contract wouldn't conflict with that.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't imagine. So I've been convinced. And us talking about it for a minute, I already want to see House of Pain run it back. Next year, let's get it going.
Let's do it.
Kofi, Georgie B, Rivante Rice, Trent Frazier. And then was there another one? Andres Felice. Sounds like a good five to me.
I love that. That team would compete, no question.
You could get Meyer. Anybody else recently that I'm missing that we'd want to see?
I don't know.
Sky Clark?
No, thank you.
After he leaves Louisville this year, he could join the Andre Curbelo?
Nah.
Probably not. Yeah, I don't know. But you got a good group of guys.
Who else was on the one recently? I know Malcolm Hill was on it, he got an NBA contract now. Well, at least he's been floating around, so I don't know if that would work.
Malcolm Hill was on that team.
You have like Michael Finke.
Michael Finke. LeRon was a coach. He wasn't a player on that team.
I thought he maybe played one of the 2 years.
Okay. Maybe he played the first year and then was a coach the second year.
Possible.
I think. Lindy, would you want to see Damonte Williams?
Yeah, I would.
Defender?
Yeah, just get out there and
see who he's going to go forehead to forehead. Let's do this. Although Luka Garza is playing in the NBA, but can we get a first-round matchup of Iowa's? Like, let's get Iowa alumni team. Let's get Illinois House of Pain back and then put them against each other in the first round. Tell me you would not be,
that would be
interested
amazing.
In seeing that.
That would be incredible. You'd have to get the only thing you'd have to do is make sure that Damonte was on the Illini team and Connor McCaffrey was on the Iowa team.
Absolutely.
And then we're good to go. Get Bohannon on the Iowa team.
Yeah, pull him off
Frazier,
the Hunter Dickinson podcast.
And then Garza and Kofi.
100%.
Let's go. Come on. Let's get this going for next year.
Another one, Maxwell is bringing the names. Alfonso Plummer.
Oh, yeah. Give me a
You're going to want him.
Give me a shooter all day long. That'd be a great addition.
Illinois could have a team that could do some damage. I like it.
Didn't the first year that they were going to do it during the COVID, wasn't Corey Bradford supposed to play at like 42 years old or something, and then he backed out?
He was. He was just finishing up his pro career, and he was going to be like an off-the-bench shooter.
Right, but
I don't know how well. I mean, Corey
would have liked to see that.
Yeah, 100%.
3 years later, 4 years later, it'll be. I don't know if he's going to lace him up, but
no. I know that Mike LaTulip, who actually is. I don't know if he's on. We have the TBT game pulled up right now. I don't know if he's on this call. He's actually going to be commentating on a couple of these games for ESPN, which is really cool. And congrats to Mike, friend of the show, and a guy that does some work for us at Atlanta Inquirer. I'm really excited for him. But he was trying to get Jamar Smith at one point, and sharpshooter who it didn't work out here at Illinois. I mean, he had some issues off the floor. Of course, the incident with Brian Carwell and the DUI situation, but had a heck of a career overseas. Like, he was in the EuroLeague, and I don't know if he won like a EuroLeague Finals MVP. I'd have to look that up, but he was someone that was still playing at a high level even as recently as, well, maybe even the present day, if not a year or so ago. So Jamar Smith's a guy that you could consider. DJ Richardson, maybe someone you'd look at, or get Brandon Paul. Uh-huh. I know you gotta be able to find a way this all works together. You know, got too many alphas, too many shot makers on the same team. You kind of try to balance out the roles and everything. Lindy mentioned Nana Egwu was on these teams recently when the House of Pain was out there playing. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it, especially year one. You take a couple of years off. You have a couple of new faces like Georgie, like Trent, like Kofi that you could bring on. I think it would add some spice and would definitely have the interest. So I'm putting my stamp on. Let's get this done, and I'll send a text to Mike after the show and say, hey, we're advocating on the airwaves. We're demanding that you bring it back, and let's get this thing going. All right, let's talk some football. Let's go with the running back market, and then in the next hour we'll tackle a couple other topics in the NFL next question. But you have Saquon Barkley, who had a heck of a year last year, helping lead the Giants to the postseason and really propping up, and part of this argument is we're going to get to, is propping up Daniel Jones to really play his best season of football. I know that Brian Daboll coming in, the former offensive coordinator with the Bills, played a big role in that as well. But Daniel Jones gets a big payday this offseason, and they give this, the franchise tag to Saquon Barkley. I know he's had some issues staying healthy, but that seems, just in terms of value to a franchise, seems flipped. It seems like the guy who should be getting the big money. I know we all know that the shelf life of running backs is not very long. We know that you have the injury concern. We know that quarterbacks are the most, it's the most valuable position probably in sports, and the number of starting caliber quarterbacks is so few in comparison to how many capable running backs there are to plug and play in that role. I'm not saying anybody could just, they could get somebody in the middle of the NFL draft and, oh, it's the next Saquon Barkley. It doesn't necessarily work like that. But for someone like Barkley of his caliber to not get that extension, and now he goes into the season on a franchise tag and cannot negotiate that contract until the end of the season. Same thing goes for Josh Jacobs, who led the league in rushing last year, had a really breakout year after some success on his rookie and second year, and then a little bit of a down stretch before then a real resurgence last year. And then Tony Pollard's another one that has already signed his franchise tag and not nearly as proven as either of those other guys, but it's brought up a conversation regarding just the overall value of the running back and the market there. So I wanted to play Saquon Barkley's clip. He was on a podcast. Its name escapes me right now, but
Money Matters, I want to
say.
Or something along those lines.
The Money Matters podcast he was on, and he's flat out said that, you know, he may have to hold out. He may have to consider the fact that based on him not getting the contract value that he desires and feels like he earned, that he may have to sit out. And it's been done before. Le'Veon Bell is an example of sitting out an entire season. And would that be something that he would ultimately do? Usually there's, it seems like almost every summer we have a star that's threatening that, and very rarely does it happen, but it is on the table at least for Saquon to miss some time, and right now his franchise tag is unsigned. So here's Saquon Barkley speaking on the matter.
I have no worry about going on a football field and knowing that I'm not playing for my worth, or saying if I have to play under, because this is my leverage. My leverage is, I can say F you to the Giants. I can say F you to my teammates and be like, you want me to show you my worth? You want to show you how much, how valuable I am to the team? I won't show up. Right. I won't play it down. And that's a play I can use. Anybody knows me, knows that's not something I want to do. But like, it's something that, has it something that crossed my mind? It's like, I never thought I would ever do that. But like, now I'm in a point where it's like, Jesus, like I might have to take it to this level. And like, am I willing, am I prepared to take it to the level? I don't know. That's something I gotta sit down and like, I gotta talk to my family. I gotta sit down and talk to my team. Gotta really, you know, strategize about this. Can't just like go off of emotions.
Shout out to the Money Matters podcast, and shout out to Kyle for some high level producing with the little beeps in there.
Yeah, I couldn't just cut it all out because we got to get what he's saying there. There's some strong words. We got to hear him, but yeah, we can't get in trouble here.
He's not the only running back that's had some strong words, at least when you also include some others on Twitter, which I'll read a few tweets. Derrick Henry, of course, King Henry, a dominant back for the Tennessee Titans, says, at this point, just take the running back position out of the game. The ones that want to be great and work as hard as they can to give their all to an organization just seems like that doesn't even matter. I'm with every running back that's fighting to get what they deserve. You also had Jonathan Taylor say, if you're good enough, they'll find you. If you work hard enough, you'll succeed. If you succeed, you boost the organization, and then doesn't matter, you're running back. And that's both of those in response to a tweet by Matt Miller, who's an NFL draft scout or covers scouting and the NFL draft for, I believe, Bleacher Report. But he said that for years, what he's hinting at is the plan for these organizations, draft the running back, use him as much as you can. If he's good, franchise tag him for 1 year. And at that point, based on the structure of these contracts, a rookie deal, 4 years, you get him for. Then you franchise them in year five. Then you've gotten five solid years out of a running back in their prime. And really, you're only paying a high dollar figure relatively that fifth year, and then you let him go and you recycle again.
Yeah, and honestly, it's even more than that. If you're a first-round running back like Saquon is or some of these other high-level guys, it's a four-year deal, then a fifth-year option that a team can pick up.
Good
then
point.
You can tag up to two times on the same player. So theoretically, you could have team control over a guy for 7 years.
Wow.
I don't know exactly how the franchise tag system works, but to my knowledge, you can tag a guy twice. And it's just it's a system that is for running backs, especially for a position that teams do not want to pay guys into their 30s or pat age 28 is the age that everyone, that's kind of the cutoff point that these teams are using, saying once you hit 28 as a running back, your production is going to decline. We don't want to commit money to running backs past age 28. And so the contract system in the NFL is hurting running backs more than any other position, because if you're not hitting free agency until you're 27, 28 years old, you've been in the league for 5-6 years. As a running back, you're never going to get a big contract at that point, because no one's going to commit 4 or 5 more years of money to you and enter your 30s past your prime and to a time where most running backs don't hold up. So it's the way I look at it is, I completely get where running backs are coming from here, where these guys are coming from. They deserve to be paid. They play a position where you're getting hit every single down. It's a really physically demanding position. Not that every position isn't in the NFL, but running backs, probably more than almost any other position, maybe more than any other position, because you're getting hit by 3-4 guys every single play. You're going to the ground. And the value that these guys have to an offense is pretty large in most cases. Now, the NFL has moved towards it's a passing league now. It's moved towards a quarterback-driven league, a passing offense-driven league. So running back's value has declined a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, the Giants is a perfect example. Where would the Giants have been last year without Saquon? They're not going to the postseason. They're not having that breakthrough year without the production and the star power that Saquon gave their offense. Because Daniel Jones, he had a good year last year. Saquon was a big part of that. And the opportunities he opened up for him. So it's tough. The way I look at it is, I totally get where running backs are coming from. They deserve to be paid. They have the right to feel this way. I also see where organizations are coming from. It's not on these organizations to make a bad financial decision for their team just to appease, just to give a guy what he quote-unquote deserves or is worth. I get it. If you're an organization and a guy's hitting free agency at 27, you're not giving him a 5-year deal. You're not guaranteeing $50 million to a guy that a position that is often injured, historically has seen production decline once you get to 28, 29, 30. It's not on these organizations. When this system is set up perfectly for them to get the most they can out of a rookie contract, tag a guy once, tag a guy a second time if that guy's really worth it, and then say, you know, we can draft another guy. We can find a committee that we think can almost equal the production of one of our guys. It's not a thing that I disagree with any of these organizations. I don't think the Giants should necessarily give Saquon a 5-year, $80 million contract. We've even seen some of these contracts recently. The Todd Gurley contract comes to mind, where he was offensive player of the year, I think, in 17 or 18, gets a 5-year big contract from the Rams, and he gets cut after like year two, or he does not make it through almost half that contract. We saw Ezekiel Elliott, 5-year deal, or he might have gotten a 6-year deal from the Cowboys. He's cut after year three of that contract this offseason.
Yeah, those are both great examples. Gurley, of course, the injury was never really the same. I mean,
that's true, yeah.
And then Zeke just got outplayed by
Tony
Pollard.
But that's part of it. I mean, running backs are as injury prone as any position just because of how much wear and tear there is and how much you're getting hit, so.
Yeah, no, that's very well put. And I agree with you. I think for the most part, a lot of these teams are doing this the right way in terms of roster building. I mean, they are, yes, to an extent, exploiting the running back position based on the setup of the contracts. And you brought up a good point about if you're a first round pick, you can use that team option to get him into a fifth year, and then you franchise tag him. So you really have a lot of this control before you're letting them hit the open market and command a longer term deal with more guaranteed money. Now, yes, the franchise tag is always pretty good market value. Like you look at this year for those at running back that are signing franchise tags, they're getting north of $10 million for 1 year, which is fully guaranteed. And I had it pulled up where the annual value of running backs in terms of around the league, like Christian McCaffrey is getting $16 million a year, Kamara $15 million a year, Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb $12 million, Aaron Jones $11 million, and then just below that, you're going to have Tony Pollard, if they sign Josh Jacobs and Saquon Barkley, at just over $10 million per year. So you're talking top 10 money in terms of the position, but just the lack of a guarantee beyond 1 year is something that really hurts those guys, especially as we're talking about at a position where an injury can really dethrone your career, and you're pushing into that window where there's that over the hill moment for those guys again. But the flip side of that is, why should the team bite the bullet on that? So what's the fix? I think that's kind of the question that people are asking. Like, do you make the rookie contracts? Some of proposed that you make an exception for running backs, which I don't see. Like, I don't see how that gets through. Like, you talk
either.
About the Players Association, you talk about guys at other positions, like then you're going to start having linebackers and cornerbacks and receivers. The wide receiver position is arguably, and I would say maybe even not, more valuable in a lot of cases, maybe outside of a few, like maybe outside of McCaffrey and Derrick Henry, but for the most part, people would rather have a star wide receiver than 1,000%. A star running back. And why should those guys be in a different situation than a running back? So I don't see a situation where you have a clock in terms of those rookie deals be different for a running back than for a different position. Maybe do you set it back in for all positions? Do you say, like, similar to the NBA, I think the NBA is a two-year, if you're a first-round pick, so you have to set this somewhere in the, you know, third or fourth round, and then extrapolate from there. But would it be a two-year guarantee, then maybe a team option in year three, and you can't tag after that? So instead of hitting the open market in year seven, six or seven, then you are in year four. Would that be a better option? And then you're limiting how many times you can franchise tag in general. Of course, that would have to apply across all positions, but that's something that maybe could be considered. But then you're trying to get these teams who are these rules a lot of times being made for? You got to get the team owners, the people with the money to agree to these type of things. Why would they want to set themselves up to be higher risk, to throw more money earlier? That's where it gets tricky. But there's no doubt that when you have a situation where these running backs are giving 4 or 5 years and you're only getting really good market value in one of the five, like, something's wrong there.
Yeah. I don't know what the solution is, to be honest with you. I mean, you laid it out there with the length. I mean, the length of the rookie deal and the fact that a team basically has control of you for 4, 5, 6 years. And as a running back, that's pretty much your average lifespan for a running back in the NFL. I don't necessarily know if the length of a rookie deal is going to decrease. I think the franchise tag is something that I've always kind of been so-so about. It's something that you don't see in these other professional leagues where you can just unilaterally say, we're placing this tag on you and we're going to take the average of, what is it? Is it the average of the top 10?
I'm not sure what it is.
Annual average, something like that. I mean, it's not, like you said, you're getting a pretty fair market value for yourself over 1 year, but it's something you don't really see unless an option has been negotiated on a previous contract or is built into the rookie structure of a deal. You don't see that in any other leagues where a team can unilaterally say, we're placing this monetary value on it. You don't have to agree. I mean, you have to sign it, obviously, but this is it. It's this or nothing. And then you see these situations where guys are holding out and we have all this stuff going on. I don't know if the franchise tag should just go away completely. I don't necessarily think it'd be a terrible thing if it did. I think maybe you place it where you can't tag a guy coming off his rookie deal. You can only tag guys that have signed a second contract, something like that. That maybe, you know, forces you to make a decision a little earlier and have a little less control over guys that are coming off that rookie deal, because really it could impact other positions as well. Running back is the most dire position, but some of these other guys are in similar situations. I just don't know if there's one set solution to this problem other than, I mean, I don't see a path forward other than running backs becoming more of a bigger part of the game again, and that's just not where it's headed.
No,
and it's not. So it's a tough situation for running backs to be in. I completely get where some of these guys are coming from, but at the same time, like, it's not on these teams to fix it. It's not on, oh, hey, Giants, pay Saquon Barkley way more than he's worth. Take this massive risk 3-4 years down the line when he's approaching 30 years old just because he's, you know, he's a valuable player to your team. Like, these teams have to look out for the long term as well. And at the end of the day, it's not a smart long term decision to pay a running back into their 30s and guarantee a bunch of money to a guy that's been in the league for a long time as a running back. It's just the reality of it.
I do think, in a vacuum, the Saquon decision is one that the Giants maybe could have done differently. Like, I'd still be skeptical of, like, they gave Daniel Jones a 4-year, $160 million contract, like $40 million a year over 4 years, and Saquon gets the franchise tag. Like, I don't know if I'd want to commit to Daniel Jones that long after really he only had one breakthrough season. In hindsight, maybe you franchise tag Daniel Jones and try to come to an agreement with Saquon. I don't know. That's just kind of me spitballing there. But at the surface value or surface level, like, after the Giants season last year, giving the huge money to Daniel Jones and being in this dispute with Saquon Barkley just seems backwards. But that's just kind of the – and I think that there are those exceptions where you have maybe a situation where you want to give – a running back like a Christian McCaffrey. And I do think that Barkley's one of those guys, especially when he's healthy. We saw what he could do finally last year after a few years of injury-plagued seasons where he's finally able to break through and have a fully healthy year. And, I mean, he's a difference-making type of player, even in an era where the running back across the board isn't as valuable or just the shelf life isn't necessarily there. Before we wrap this thing up, I do want to bring up the Le'Veon Bell. I mentioned him earlier as someone that sat out a season. He is partially to blame for some of the current situation. That case study is very interesting because you look at, he was with the Steelers 5 years, 4 years on that rookie deal, making less than $1 million a year. They franchise tag him in year five. He gets $12 million that year, so a nice payday. But we're talking about what was one of the best backs in the league. Like, he was uber productive, utilized a ton in the passing game and also on the ground. And when he sat out in 2018, James Conner fills the role. And in 2018, James Conner runs for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. And the Steelers are one of those consistent as ever organizations. Lindy brought up a good point. Like, Denver has always been, whoever the running back is in Denver runs for 1,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these teams are just set up to have production on the ground. And yes, there's more to it than just the running back itself. You got to have the offensive line. You got to have, you know, a good team for the most part around them. But some of these teams can just churn out running backs, and when their contract's up, they let them go and they draft another one or sign one in free agency and they run for 1,000 yards. It's like it's nothing. So that's what it makes it all very interesting.
Yeah, I think that is the other part of it, is just the talent gap and the production gap when it comes to a running back. It isn't very big. You can fill the shoes of even some of these top guys. Now, is anyone going to be Saquon Barkley that the Giants got and replace him with? No, they're not. But how much of a difference is it going to make going